Hello, Disney fans, and welcome to the show. My name is Austin Terrace, and I'm joined here today by my wonderful sister, Emma.
Hi, everyone.
Coming up on this episode of Disney Daydream, we'll review the new Disney movie Encanto. Later on, we'll share as much news as we can from the Destination D23 conference. So, take a little break in your busy day, and let's start daydreaming. Find Disney Daydream on Instagram at Diz Daydream or on Facebook like Disney Daydream Podcast. We also have a Patreon page that is patreon.com/Disney Daydream. That is where some Disney Daydream super fans go to make a monthly financial donation to the show. And in return, they receive some special perks for their patronage. We really appreciate those patrons. So if you enjoy our content and you want to support us in that way, please feel free to check us out. Our show is sponsored by our Patreon supporters and also by Daydream Travel Agency, a full service Disney travel agency that can help you make reservations, book that dream trip, and provide you with expert Disney traveling advice. Those trips can be booked to Disney World, Disneyland, Adventures by Disney, Aulani, or Disney Cruise Line. So any type of Disney trip you can imagine, Daydream Travel Agency can help you book that. If you want to learn more, you can head over to daydreamtravelagency.com and check out the information on the website. So obviously, this is coming out a little bit late. It's been, you know, a lot going on in the world, in our personal lives as the creators of the show. We've had final exams coming up. I just unfortunately couldn't put out the last episode on time last week. It wasn't able to happen, so I apologize for that. And of course, we are, again, not joined by Kylie, who is dealing along with her husband with the horrible aftermath of that terrible school shooting tragedy in Oxford, Michigan, which is their hometown, their own community. Sometimes you think that these types of things could never reach your own doorstep, and unfortunately it has. So please keep them in your thoughts, keep all of the victims in your prayers as well, and just every member of that community as they try to deal with this impossible situation. There are really just no words. They just need a lot of support right now. So for the foreseeable time, Kylie will be, you know, taking some time away from the podcast, and she'll return when she's able to return. So we're going to talk about Encanto first. We're actually, in a way, flipping the normal format of our show just because it's been so long since we published our last episode. In between that time, they had Destination D23, where they dropped a ton of news. So our topic for today is actually just Destination D23 and a bunch of news stories that came out of that. And we're going to kind of have a mini topic before we get into that. We're going to discuss Encanto, which we all saw over the Thanksgiving break together as a family. And this would be a good time, if you don't want any spoilers whatsoever, this might not be the greatest time for you to listen, but we'll try not to like completely give away every aspect of the movie. So this film was a Disney Animated Studios film, and it tells the tale of a young Colombian girl named Mirabel and the rest of her Madrigal family. And the abuela of the family, basically a miracle occurred after a really horrible situation with her and her husband. And out of nowhere, these gorgeous mountains arose, and they were gifted superpowers, essentially, and a magical house. And the entire family has a gift. Each member of the family has a supernatural gift. And they use that gift to help the community. And of course, the only one who is not blessed with that gift is our main character. And throughout the movie, we eventually learn that, you know, a family's connection and love for one another and the support that they show each other is ultimately more important than possessing any type of magical superpower. And that's, in some ways, one of the major themes of the movie. Emma, I just want to go quickly to your thoughts here overall about the film. If you had to maybe give it a score out of 10, where would you place this one? What were some of your maybe favorite or least favorite aspects of the film?
Yeah, I overall really liked the film. I thought it was well done, and I loved the story. I loved the concept. I think I'd probably give it 7.5 or 8 out of 10. Yeah, the characters were good. I thought that I liked how they all had like their own distinct personalities. It wasn't just kind of random people. And the thing I didn't like was the music. I thought it was a bit disappointing. I know that we talked about it after the movie, and like there wasn't a lot of memorable music. It wasn't bad, but it just wasn't like up to par with other Disney films. So yeah, but I still enjoyed it. I thought it was overall a really good movie, and there was a really good message. I liked how it wasn't like, I mean, everything was magically resolved, but like the main character, it wasn't like all of her problems were gone. It's like she went through this whole movie dealing with not having powers, and it's not like that just got resolved in the end. She just came to terms with it, which is more realistic than other Disney movies, I guess. So I liked that.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And then I also enjoyed how this movie didn't feel long either. It was very action-packed, almost to its detriment in a certain way. We can focus on the music for just a little bit, because our family did have a pretty big discussion about that. And I felt like this was another score composed by Lin-Manuel Miranda that did not have any of like the memorable moments that his Moana score did. And again, it's not like I didn't hate the music. It just felt like another In the Heights, which is kind of one of his first major musical productions. It felt very much like a theatrical score, what he would do for like a Broadway type of show. And I don't think it really worked very well. Waiting on a Miracle was the only song in the movie that I wanted to go back and listen to again. And it's like rough when you are incorporating elements of hip hop into this and very, very fast text. You have to like keep up with the music, and that works a lot better if it's something that you're going to go back and listen to over and over again. Like, but this isn't In the Heights and this isn't Hamilton. This is like a Disney movie, and you need to immediately grasp the story, and you have to be able to leave the theater humming those tunes. Like, and he's done it before. I'm sure everybody left the Moana theater humming How Far I'll Go. And even some of his faster like pieces in that, Dwayne the Rock Johnson's song, whatever that was called.
Yeah, You're Welcome. Mind.
Yeah, You're Welcome. That was at least, that had a catchy melody too. And this one fell a little bit flat. I'm just ready to not have every Hispanic or Latinx project composed by him in the future. I think we need to kind of spread that love. And it's not like he's Colombian either. Although
that's true.
Although maybe that's better for him to compose the score than I guess a white person, but still that's not necessarily like a catch-all. It doesn't necessarily represent Colombian music as authentically as it possibly could. So I don't know, like it's time to move away from having his name attached to every new project. And I know that people love him and I do too, but there's kind of a limit to what we should expect from one composer. And it definitely is lacking a little bit. The other thing, and this is just a comment about Disney and Pixar movies as a whole, over the last like 5 years, there's no standout villain in this movie. And by no means do I think that we need to have a traditional type of like villain to love and hate in every movie, but we haven't had one in quite a while, it seems. And villains can provide either interesting plot points, fun music, even at certain moments, like a little bit of comedic relief as well. And I want to see another like original great villain from Disney. It's kind of time. And
yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
I don't know. A lot of the times villains are my favorite characters because they're just interesting. I definitely think that Disney movies can greatly benefit from having a villain. And yeah, recently it's kind of just all been internal struggles, and mm-hmm. which is totally fine. And like, I like movies that are like more of an internal battle. Still, even when it's not, like Moana, for example, the villain in that turns out to be good. At the end of the movie, all of a sudden, it's just like a good character. And so it's kind of like a cop-out almost. It's like, I just think they need to commit to a villain sometimes. And that's something I really haven't thought about before, actually. It's just more interesting, and it's a nice change for a while. But at this point, it's like every movie doesn't really have a clear villain. So it's kind of just give us some variation.
Right. And I want to say, like, it kind of felt Disney was moving in that direction even after Tangled, or after Wreck-It Ralph, I guess maybe in a way after Zootopia as well. Just kind of the early 2010 period maybe felt like the last clear-cut villain era, and we've been lacking in that department for a while. A positive to the movie, along with everything Disney's done lately, is the quality of the animation. Just the landscapes, architecture, the colors, the costumes, those were all brilliantly done. It was unquestionably a visually gorgeous film. So that is just, they've been hitting it out of the park. And I think a lot of people are continuing, and rightfully so, continuing to talk about the quality visually of Disney animation versus Pixar animation, and how it's maybe like swinging in Disney's favor. And I think that's fair, because everything that they've done recently has been a home run in that department. And I do think that the movie continued to get better and better as it went on. It did have a super touching, phenomenal ending. I loved it. And I think my last little quibble with the movie is how we didn't get enough of certain characters. And that's partly the writer director's fault, because there are so many characters in this movie. We don't really get to know all of them. And there are some major ones like Bruno. When you watch this film, Bruno provides, that's Mirabelle's uncle. He provides like a really major plot point in this film, but he's kind of introduced in the middle, and his treatment at the end is really just brushed over, and he does not get the screen time that character needs. So there are a couple more as well. Like, we get to know one of Mirabelle's sisters really well. We get to know the other sister a little bit. A bunch of her cousins are just kind of introduced and we don't really know anything about their personalities in the same way with some of her other aunts and uncles. I guess that's just one of the challenges of making a movie like this, and it's about a huge family. Not everybody is really going to be treated as like a fully fleshed out character.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that, in my opinion, Bruno was the most interesting character. He had the most potential to be the most well-developed character with the most interesting story. And I thought he was the funniest character. And then they just kind of, he wasn't utilized to the degree he could have been.
Yeah. And he was facing like a family struggle, an internal conflict as well. And then for him, his resolution at the end was just, oh, kind of like that. Everything's fine now. Yeah, oh, he's back. It's all good.
Yeah. That made me, that annoyed me. There were so many missed opportunities with him.
Yeah.
Which, yeah.
So I think like overall to me, I'd probably give this one a 7 out of 10. A movie that had like the type of potential to maybe get up to like an 8.5 or 9 for me. But there were just a few things that kind of held it back and held it back from me thinking that this is like one of Disney's really great movies, and instead just being like really good movie, which is fine sometimes. And yeah, that is our thoughts about Encanto. Still definitely go see it. Lots of great stuff. Visually gorgeous. You'll get at least one really good song. So it's not something that you should skip for sure. All right. And please stay tuned, because Destination D23 was jam-packed with announcements for the coming year in Disney parks. So that is our topic, and we'll be coming right back with that soon. Right. Destination D23 took place, I believe, on the 19th and 20th of November, and Disney dropped a lot of information there. We'll cover some news stories about Destination D23. Then there were about two others that were mentioned outside of that are important for us to tell you about. So lots of news today. And first up, let's talk about some Magic Kingdom activities. So Mickey's Magical Friendship Fair is coming to Magic Kingdom as a new in front of the castle show, and Festival of the Fantasy Parade will be returning. So the new castle show, Mickey's Magical Friendship Fair, will be debuting in 2022. It's going to feature a new original song, and then the show overall will be an updated version of Mickey's Royal Friendship Fair. That's what used to be outside of the castle before COVID. It's going to have similar scenes, that new song, Where the Magic Feels Like Home, along with a new opening and closing scene. So they're just kind of adjusting a few things. They'll have those iridescent costumes, and the show is just going to be adjusted to celebrate the 50th anniversary. So an interesting announcement. Obviously, the 50th is already happening. So it's not going to be taking place during the full 18 months. The most information that we have right now is just 2022 is the year where that show is going to debut. We are getting that daytime parade back at Magic Kingdom. Festival of Fantasy Parade will be returning next year. The parade was discontinued at the start of the pandemic. It'll be the first like full run parade to return to Disney World. They've done some like special party parades and things like that, but never like a full-time parade. And this announcement comes after Disney already told us that the Main Street Electrical Parade would be returning to Disneyland. So we're going to have an everyday show and parade at each park, Anaheim and then in Orlando. So that's pretty exciting. I am trying to just be happy about this announcement, even though Festival of Fantasy is not my favorite parade. I was kind of hoping we might return with a fully new daytime parade, but no such luck. But anyway, at least something is coming back. So pretty cool announcement there, Emma.
Yes, very exciting. So the next story I'm very excited about. Fantasmic is returning to Hollywood Studios in 2022. And it is coming with a new show sequence. Fantasmic and World of Color are both returning to Disney in 2022, and the shows are returning alongside the Main Street Electrical Parade for its 50th anniversary. And the exact dates haven't been announced yet. We've also learned that Fantasmic, at least at Hollywood Studios, is getting a new sequence. And the segment is featuring Moana, Aladdin, and Frozen. Yeah, this new sequence is only confirmed for Disney World's show at this moment and not Disneyland yet. So we will see about that. But that's very exciting. And, you know, I love Fantasmic. I can't wait. And I'm not sure when it'll be happening. I'm kind of assuming that it won't be up in time for my trip because I'm going in March and I don't want to get my hopes up.
Who knows? A lot of these announcements came with just the year this time.
Yeah.
So we don't know exactly when in 2022 things will launch or return, but I'm so, so happy that they've made a commitment to bringing back Fantasmic. I'm sure it's super expensive production to put on every night, and I wouldn't put it past them to just act like it never happened. But they're bringing it back, and I'm not angry that they're adjusting the show either. I feel like the story of that show it's kind of a loose story, and you can do a lot of different things with it. I feel like the vibe of the show is going to stay the same no matter what sequences are in the middle. And as long as you've got like that Mickey opener and the dragon and then the closing at the end with those fireworks and Mickey at the top of that mountain and kind of the ferry boat of characters going by, like that's what Fantasmic is. It's kind of like a spectacle. It's not necessarily a story that has to remain the same over all of those years. So this update is probably going to make it more relevant for younger audiences, especially incorporating Frozen. No surprise that that's one of the ones that was chosen. And yeah, I'll be really happy to see this one again at some point and hopefully the near future. And our next story, Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind will open in the summer of 2022 at Epcot. This is an indoor roller coaster, was initially announced in 2017. The construction has taken a long time. It was delayed during 2020 and they discontinued work on it. And it failed to meet that original goal of opening for the 50th anniversary, but it is now confirmed to be on the schedule for 2022. The franchise stars, Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, they're returning for the attraction, and the footage began filming with the director James Gunn in October. And it's also confirmed that Glenn Close is going to be reprising her role as Nova Prime for the attraction. Great stuff. People seem to love this ride out in Disneyland, and I am super excited to finally get to try it. The good news and bad news. The bad news, even though it looks like the Tron coaster has made an incredible amount of progress, the opening for that has now been delayed. So we should be thinking like the end of 2022 instead of the early summer for the Tron coaster. Not exactly sure why it's having significant delays. It seems like every week they post new pictures and the track is really coming together. It looks like it could be completed in the next few months, but you know, I'm sure the Imagineers are know much more than we do about that situation. We also have new shows that will be premiering on the Disney Wish cruise ship. These seem fantastic to me. So the first one is A Treasure Retold, a new telling of Disney's The Little Mermaid. In this modern day setting, the curtain will rise on an enchanted treasure chest. At the moment, it's discovered by a group of storytellers, led by a special young woman who has the power to unlock its magic. As they uncover the who's-its and what's-its galore hidden within the trunk, the storytellers will take on the roles of Ariel, Ursula, Prince Eric, Sebastian, Flounder, and more, bringing to life the immersive undersea world right before guests' eyes. They'll put their own contemporary spin on the timeless story of a young woman's search for independence, love, and a place in the world. Disney The Little Mermaid will feature innovative theatrical design, dazzling special effects, artistic choreography, and a reimagined script and score that will surprise and delight guests of all ages. The show will also include new orchestrations, projections that turn the Walt Disney Theater into a 360 immersive under-the-sea environment, and cutting-edge puppetry for some of our favorite aquatic characters like Flotsam and Jetsam. That sounds cool to me, Emma. Not just a retelling. I feel like when you go see a musical on a cruise ship, that is kind of compressed into like a 45 minute, an hour type of show. A lot can be lost if you just decide to do what you can with the original story. If you have like a thoughtful recreation, that can sometimes be much better than trying to compress like a 2-hour movie into a 45 minute theatrical production.
Yeah, for sure. You know, maybe they'll bring it to Disney.
They should bring it to Hollywood Studios. Replace... For our listeners who don't know, we don't like Voyage of the Little Mermaid in Hollywood Studios. It's horrible. So
it's so bad.
Some of our frequent listeners are, it's like, oh, they're bringing this up again. And yes, we are. Please replace that show, Disney. Please.
If I could, yeah, that's like, if I could have one thing in Disney, this might not be true actually, but if I could ask for one thing from Disney, it would be to replace that show. It's so bad.
Yeah, it'd be towards the top of my list as well, I think. All right. And then the second original show coming to the Wish is Disney Sees the Adventure. On the first night aboard the Wish, guests will embark on a musical voyage into some of their favorite stories during an original musical spectacular, Disney Sees the Adventure. When Captain Minnie hands over the helm to her dear friend Goofy, he'll set sail into uncharted waters on a journey to discover his own inner captain. Along the way, Goofy will encounter a bevy of bold, brave, and brilliant Disney and Pixar friends who encourage him to lead with his heart through rousing renditions of iconic Disney songs. Tiana will teach Goofy the power of hard work to make a dream come true during a lively performance of Almost There from Disney Animation's The Princess and the Frog. Goofy will navigate to the big ocean blue where Crush and Squirt, the tubular turtles from Pixar's Finding Nemo, show him how to go with the flow in a high-energy musical production that fans will recognize from Finding Nemo the musical at Disney's Animal Kingdom. Just these first two songs alone have made me want to immediately book a cruise on this ship. I would just die, like back-to-back, Almost There, and then Go with the Flow. Count me in. Next, in an original arrangement exclusive to the show, heroines Elsa, Moana, and Merida will perform a powerful medley of Let It Go, How Far I'll Go, and Touch the Sky, emboldening Goofy to go into the unknown. When Goofy loses his way and self-doubt takes hold once again, he'll gain the courage to go the distance with the help of Hercules and a host of heroes from a variety of Disney films. The adventure will culminate in a cavalcade of characters joining Captain Minnie and Goofy on stage during a grand farewell before leading guests out of the theater and into the grand hall for an unforgettable send-off experience, the ultimate kiss goodnight to close guests' first day on board. That just sounds, although a bit corny, absolutely epic. What a great way to kick off your cruise. Brilliant musical choices. Your next story, Emma, is about Finding Nemo the musical and its replacement. So if Go with the Flow is no longer there, then it has new life aboard the Disney Wish. So glad that that song is not going to die.
Yeah, me too. Those shows sound awesome, and I'd love to see them. So Finding Nemo, the musical, is being replaced by Finding Nemo, the Big Blue and Beyond. And so that will be coming to Animal Kingdom in 2022 at some point. And the show is going to take place in the same time frame as Finding Dory. And the audience will find themselves at the Marine Life Institute. Fan favorite songs from Finding Nemo the musical will return as we reunite with the fish that escaped from P. Sherman 42 Wallaby Way, Sydney, as they arrive in California. So this is exciting. I am sad because I just love Finding Nemo the musical, and it's sad to see it go. But
if fan favorite songs are returning, Go With the Flow has to be included.
Right.
The Big Blue World and Go With the Flow, they've got to be there. Yeah. You can't just like not have it. That's the song they reprise at the end for the bows, for Curtain Call.
Yeah. I definitely think those two will be in there. We like still don't have a ton of information about it, but I'm excited to get a new show. Hopefully it will be just as good, if not better, than Finding Nemo the musical. I have high hopes. I'll try not to get them too high, but because I don't want to be disappointed.
We want thoughtful music. The new music should be composed by the same composers. I'm hoping that we still have those great sets and puppets that we did last time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I feel like I need to watch Finding Dory again.
Me too.
I honestly watched it just that one time in the theaters, and I don't think I've ever seen it again.
I think I've seen it maybe twice. I don't know if you were there, but I feel like I went to a drive-in movie and saw it.
Oh, a drive-in?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember doing that.
So I think I saw it in the theaters and then at a drive-in movie, but I'm not positive when or who that was with. So,
all right. And along with this announcement, they opened casting calls for the show. So Emma, if you're truly interested, hop on down there and, you know, get on a flight to Orlando or wherever they're casting and throw your hat in the ring for Nemo.
Yeah, for sure.
This story is very weird. This was not connected to D23, which, let me just say, Bob Chapek did not make an appearance at D23. They said it was because of a conflict with his schedule, but we're pretty sure it was just because his reception would have been horrible. And this next story is about him. So Bob Chapek is hoping to bring the company into the sports betting market. He hopes to do that through ESPN in an effort to attract younger audiences and create new revenue. And it's truly, that's what it's about. Yeah, that's what Disney's about. It's about creating new revenue streams. Chapek said that the most recent fourth quarter earnings call that Disney must, and I quote, seriously consider getting into gambling in a bigger way. And ESPN is a perfect platform for this. So they're probably looking to partner or do some type of licensing agreement with DraftKings, BetRivers, or Caesars Entertainment. One of the companies that you see incessant ads now if you live in the Midwest, because sports betting is now legal here, and they flood your social media and the radio airwaves and TV. So according to Chapek, Disney is, quote, moving towards a great presence in online sports betting. And given our reach and scale, we have the potential to partner with third parties in this space in a very meaningful way. It's driven by the consumer, particularly the younger customer, that will replenish the sports fans over time and their desire to have gambling as part of their sports experience. End quote. Chapek didn't elaborate on how they would actually enter the gambling market. He did say that he's not worried about ruining Disney's reputation and their brand. So here's another quote by Chapek. Gambling does not have the same cachet now that it had, say, 10 or 20 years ago. And we have some concerns as a company about our ability to get in it without having a brand withdrawal. But I can tell you that given all the research that we've done recently, that that is not the case. It actually strengthens the brand of ESPN when you have a betting component, and it has no impact on the Disney brand. Therefore, to go after that demographic opportunity, plus the, of course, not insignificant revenue implications, that is something that we're keenly interested in and are pursuing aggressively. End quote. It's just strange. I don't know what like research you can objectively do to determine that this is not going to have any type of effect on your brand. I just don't know how you enter this space. Like, these things already have websites and apps. I don't know what else Disney brings to the table besides controlling ESPN that, you know, talks about sports 24/7 and hosts certain events and televises games. It seems to me like you would need like a mecca, like a physical location that would provide your users with some type of like interactive sports betting experience that you could do like if you were in Vegas or something like that. And I mean, is that what's going to happen at Boardwalk? You know, the ESPN restaurant that closed down and is getting refurbished, is that now going to transform into a hub of sports betting at Disney World? Or is ESPN Wide World of Sports going to be incorporating that? You can have a fun day at the park and end with a nightcap of betting on a primetime football game. It's just very odd, and it doesn't seem to mesh with Disney's image in any way, besides, hey, this will lead to a crap ton of money for us.
Yeah, I don't understand at all just why. Literally, besides just making more money, there's no reason that this should be happening. I don't.
Or it's going to be the Tron light coaster sponsored by DraftKings. They're going to start getting into attractions now. That'll be the the next thing, or Disney's next theme park. It's going to be Bette Rivers World or something like that. A huge announcement, Emma. You've got our final news story of the day. What's going to happen after Bob Iger officially steps down from his chairperson role on December 31st?
Susan Arnold, who is a veteran of consumer products giant Procter & Gamble, as well as the Carlyle Group investment firm, is taking over for Bob Iger as chairman of Walt Disney Company's board of directors when he departs on December 31st. And this transition will mark the end of an era for Disney, which will not have Iger in a senior operating role for the first time since 1996. Disney said Iger informed its board that he intended to step down as chairman of the board at the same time he left his role as executive chairman at the end of the year. Iger, about Susan, said, "Susan is an incredibly esteemed executive whose wealth of experience, unwavering integrity, and expert judgment have been invaluable to the company since she first joined the board in 2007. Having most recently served as independent lead director, Susan is the perfect choice for chairman of the board, and I am confident the company is well positioned for continued success under her guidance and leadership. It has been a distinct honor to work with Susan and our many other talented directors, and I am incredibly grateful for the support and wise counsel they have provided during my tenure." Arnold has been a member of Disney's board for 14 years and has served as its independent lead director since 2018. Disney's new executive structure will keep the roles of CEO and chairman separate for now, a trajectory the company has followed in the past. Iger was named CEO in 2005, but was not awarded the chairman role until 2012. Bob Chapek was named Disney's chief executive in February of last year. Arnold spent years in senior roles at Procter & Gamble, where she led several of its top business units between 2002 and 2009. Between 2013 and 2021, she was an operating executive at Carlyle Group, and she has served on the boards of McDonald's Corporation and MBTY Inc. Arnold said in a statement, "As I step into this new role as chairman of the board, I look forward to continuing to serve the long-term interests of Disney shareholders and working closely with CEO Bob Chapek as he builds upon the company's century-long legacy of creative excellence and innovation." So, there's that.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'm going to have to take a deep dive into Susan Arnold to kind of learn more about her and her reputation. I don't know a whole lot at this moment. I just can't believe that we're now basically 3 weeks away from Bob Iger's departure, like full departure from the company. Wonder what he'll do next. There's a rumor he's interested in purchasing the Phoenix Suns NBA basketball team. Hopefully they're still calling him to get some advice from time to time. And I'm just shocked that his influence has gone back to 1996. Like the first time without him in a senior operating role in 25 years. That's pretty wild. It's going to definitely leave a big hole in the organization. And if current leadership was a little bit more focused on the creative and innovation aspect of the company, I feel like I would, you know, be happier at this moment. Right now, seeing that article just made me even more nervous for the coming few years. That's a lot of news. Destination D23. There was even some things that we had to kind of skim over. For example, a couple things off the top of my head. There's going to be a new pretty big food type of court, like cafe, opening in Epcot. They announced that all of the Epcot renovations should be completed in 2023. So Epcot still has at least probably like a year and a half of these refurbishment type of deals. Marvel Avengers Campus is going to be opening in Disneyland Paris next summer. And trying to rack my brain over anything else that I missed. I think that kind of covers all the major stories. So there we have it. Again, please keep Kylie in your thoughts and prayers. Keep the community of Oxford in your thoughts and prayers. And thank you again for having some patience with the podcast as we've tried to navigate the last few weeks and get everything in order. We appreciate your support and always for taking the time to listen to our show. And I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Disney Daydream Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll join us for the next one. Remember, be kind to one another and take the time to find a magical moment in each and every day.